This podcast is brought to you by the Everything Nut Allergy Cookbook, available wherever books are sold. Find details at foodallergypi.com. And be sure to join me over on Facebook, the Food Allergy PI Community Group, where we can connect, support, and share. Welcome to the Food Allergy Talk podcast. While the topics covered on this podcast are not medical advice and are simply the opinions and views of both myself and those interviewed, you will hear me make mention of my holistic nutrition certification. You should know that this is not a medical license, and you should always consult a licensed board-certified allergist. I'm Lisa Horn of Food Allergy PI, host of Food Allergy Talk. I'm a holistic nutritionist, cookbook author, and food allergy community advocate and blogger. I'm married with 5 children, ages 6, 8, 11, 13, and 16. My oldest, Stetson, is the only one of my 5 children with food allergies. He has both gained and lost food allergies through this journey. Anaphylactic to peanut and shellfish since he was a baby, and newly diagnosed with pecan and garlic, which, by the way, is the hardest of all of them. It is in everything. My second oldest, Isabella, is dairy intolerant, and my second youngest is gluten-free and in the diagnosis process of determining if she has celiac. We live in southeastern Arizona, where I homeschool all 5 of our children. I got involved in the food allergy community through support outreach and fundraising in 2009. Later, in 2012, I initiated legislation to allow for stock epinephrine to be available for all students in Arizona schools. In 2018, I began focusing my energy on reaching out to the food allergy community through my blog, Food Allergy PI, because isn't that what we all are? We're detectives, we're investigators, reading all the labels, finding out what's safe. I share there my own experience caring for food allergies, travel, dining out, product finds, and recipe creation. In 2021, I authored the Everything Nut Allergy Cookbook. Most recently, in 2022, I joined WebMD as a contributing writer for their food allergy blog series. And now, in its 3rd year, I have continued to bring you the Food Allergy Talk podcast as a way to continue building community and helping others in the food allergy world. My goal is to help you not only learn from my journey and those interviewed on the Food Allergy Talk podcast, but to grow and gain confidence in all facets of living a full, whole life with food allergy, body, mind, and spirit. Health, safety, social, emotional, and spiritual well-being, all of which are impacted by living with food allergies, as well as for those caring for others with food allergies. This is Food Allergy Talk, where you can come to connect and leave uplifted, empowered, and ready for success. Welcome back to the Food Allergy Talk podcast. If you're living it or have a question about it, we are talking about it. I'm your host, Lisa Horn of Food Allergy PI. On this episode of Food Allergy Talk, I welcome Jennifer Togel. Jennifer is mom to Adina, the spark behind the Adina Act, which will require all OTC and RX medications to be labeled with any applicable food allergens and or gluten. Jennifer carries an EpiPen herself, and Adina has celiac disease, a dairy allergy, and they both have EoE. They live in the Minneapolis, Minnesota suburbs. Jennifer, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me, Lisa. I really appreciate your time and getting some awareness of the Adina Act that I think could really help so many people in the U.S.
Absolutely. Thank you for taking time. I came across your account when I was playing around on Instagram one day, and I was so excited to see that somebody was doing this. There's so many things that need to be done in the food allergy community, and it really takes a village. It takes all of us working on different facets, on different things, and this was something that needed attention, and I'm so glad that you're doing this, and I'm glad to hopefully help spread the word and get more people on board to help out and work towards this. So before we get into the actual ADINA Act, I kind of wanted to ask you a little bit about you and go backward a little bit before we jump forward into current advocacy. How long have you been diagnosed with EoE? What's your story? Like, what were your symptoms? Have you had this your whole life since you were a little kid? Is it something that came on as an adult?
Yeah. So when I was growing up, didn't really deal with many allergies beyond just like seasonal, you know, normal stuff of like my nose is running when pollen is really heavy or, you know, things like that. But when I had ADINA, things changed drastically. I'm a big believer that just carrying her and delivering her was a really traumatic experience on my body and like most women. And it triggered a lot of things that changed health-wise. For example, my first experience with any sort of severe allergic response, ADINA was very little. She was an infant. I don't remember exactly what it was. I got some sort of illness that I needed amoxicillin or some sort of penicillin-based medication for. And I remember I was sitting there and all of a sudden I was starting to get hives everywhere and my lips and were swelling and like I was itchy all over the place. And one by one, the symptoms started progressing and I had never experienced it. And I remember I drove myself to the hospital. Thank goodness. It was literally like less than a quarter mile away from my house. But I walked into the ER and they were like, oh, you're going into anaphylaxis. That was quite an experience. And it only progressed from there. And, you know, now ADINA is 12 going on 13 and I have a number of allergies. So I've come to find out that I'm deathly allergic to penicillin. I also have, some allergic responses to nightshades. So anything in the nightshade family, like tomatoes, bell peppers, chilies, paprika, white potato, eggplant, like all of those. And we're in the process of trying to determine what exactly is it oral allergy syndrome or is it related to my EoE? It's been a whole thing because it's a struggle and it's inconsistent and, currently actually being tested for mast cell activation syndrome on top of that. Wow. And then the most terrifying experience is, last week I actually went into anaphylaxis while out on a run and it has come to find out that I have exercise-induced anaphylaxis, which sounds fake, but I can tell you it is very much real after having to epi myself.
Yeah, how scary. And while you're out exercising.
Yeah, so it's the food allergy / allergy world is relatively new to me as an adult. And it's been a wild ride. And specific to EoE, looking back at it, I think I have probably had EoE for probably close to 15 years. And I just, until ADINA got diagnosed, I didn't even know what it was. I didn't know who to talk to, if it was even worth talking to someone about. Like, I just didn't have enough education on it to understand that it's one, a disease or something that people struggle with, two, how to manage it, or really anything to do with it. But once ADINA was diagnosed, I kind of had that light bulb moment of like, oh, all of these symptoms and the things that she has going on also happened to me. Yeah. That was a realization. And in true mom life, we often put our children and our families first. And I didn't really do anything about it until about 2 years ago. I was out to dinner with some friends and I experienced a really scary food impaction moment while sitting there eating dinner. And I was kind of like, all right, I need to actually go do something about this. So I went and I got a scope and I, without a doubt, I had to be stretched to that first scope. And he was like, yeah, you definitely have EoE. Your numbers are really high and we need to figure this out. And it's been a journey trying to figure out what works. I'm thankful ADINA has her EoE entirely managed with diet. She's found out her triggers and it's doing really well. I am not so lucky. My numbers are still pretty bad and it's still a pretty daily struggle. So it's been quite an experience, even seeing ADINA having EoE and me having EoE, us living in the same household and being the mom that I know how to manage it for one of us, but I struggle personally where it's like, I still feel cruddy every day and it just doesn't make sense, but it does at the same time.
Wow. So you have actual
anaphylactic food allergies, but then you also have eosinophilic esophagitis, or EOE, for anybody that's listening and is like, what is that? What are they keep saying? EOE, right? Yeah. People hear about it all the time. In a nutshell, how would you explain that? Like, what happens to you when you have a reaction, or when you're EOE? You mentioned an impaction while you were at a restaurant.
Yeah. So eosinophilic esophagitis is, it's an autoimmune disorder where your body essentially gets confused and attacks itself when you ingest or come in contact in your esophagus with an allergen that triggers that confusion in your body. It creates strictures in your esophagus, which imagine like a kid's, you know, soft cloth play tunnel where they have this round parts that come in tighter to kind of support it. It's like that in your esophagus. And the more reaction that you have, the tighter that restriction gets in your esophagus. And eventually food can get caught. It can be painful. It can cause GI distress, stomach aches, vomiting. It has a number of really serious repercussions. And with me personally, my esophagus has been, it was so inflamed and so angry. And I had so many strictures that, my food physically got stuck while I was sitting there, and no matter what I did, it wouldn't go down. And I had to, manage that situation, and it was really scary in the moment.
That is scary. Did they, and I don't mean to sound ignorant or anything at all, but in my mind, I'm like, what do? You ask for somebody to Heimlich you? Can it even come back up if it's, do you know what I mean? Like what do you do?
So
that's scary. That's so scary. Yeah.
In really severe cases, sometimes people have to have emergency surgery to get the food impaction removed, or you have to go to the ER. I've had it happen since then where, you know, I need to take really tiny little sips of something to try and get it to calm down. Sometimes you can take like a liquid Benadryl to try and, because you're basically having a cellular allergic response in your esophagus. So sometimes,
and if it won't go down, it probably won't come back up. Like Heimlich probably wouldn't.
Like sometimes you can get it to come back up. And it's just, it's painful and it is scary. And thankfully you can still breathe in that circumstance, but it's, just, it's like, you just have like something lodged there. No matter what you do, you can't get it to go away. So, it's just that moment of like, okay, can I calm myself down? Can I take a medication to try and get my body to calm itself down so that hopefully the inflammation can be relieved enough for it to go somewhere?
Yeah.
And everyone kind of manages a little bit differently about what works for them. But, you know, for both Adina and I, we've recognized that when we're having the start of a flare, it's, you know, you're swallowing a piece of food and you can just feel it moving at a glacial pace. Like imagine you're pouring molasses and that's like the speed of something moving down your esophagus, and you feel it the entire time.
That's so scary. Now, she has EOE also, but she also has anaphylactic food allergies like you do, but she also has celiac. Like, that's a lot. How did you find out about all of that? And was it all at once? Was it kind of one by one? How did that all come to be?
We are really thankful, as far as Adina's allergy to dairy, we are thankful she not that long ago passed a dairy challenge. So
That's so exciting anymore,
which is really exciting. I mean, she still has not great responses, but like we're out of the anaphylactic phase, which is really incredible. So, I mean, we still avoid it, you know, it's still a very real part of our life. But, as far as managing that, you know, I still carry an EpiPen. We still have one for her. We are daily medication for allergy suppression. It's just part of the everyday. So I guess what further questions can I answer in regards to that one?
So how did you figure out that she had celiac and EOE? Since she was a baby, did she show signs of maybe, for example, like if you were nursing her, trying, you know, like something's not right, she's not quite drinking right, or what kind of led to you figuring out something's not right?
You know, when she was a baby, she was a She was a vomiter, a really, really big vomiter. And she is our one and only. And when we had Adina, we were one of our only friends in our group that had a child. So I didn't have a lot to go off of. And we didn't live in an area close to any family. So we were kind of just winging it and seeing what was okay. I mean, I felt like she was throwing up an excessive amount for an infant. I brought it up to our pediatrician a number of times. And she was born in Arizona, and then we moved to Minnesota when she was about 8 months old. And I, again, brought it up with a pediatrician in Minnesota, and they always seemed to have like a generic response of, oh, you know, sometimes kids can't tolerate this, or, you know, when she started eating foods, I think she's just eating too fast. Or then it was, you know, her molars are coming in and she's, you know, there's a lot of saliva that's causing regurgitation and all of these things that are, they always seem to have an excuse for it. And it never really sat quite right for me. Because when I say she would vomit a lot, I mean, she would eat and within 15 minutes, she was throwing up almost consistently. And to me, I'm like, that doesn't make sense. So we tried on our own to remove dairy. We removed gluten, but we didn't know, obviously, because at the time we didn't quite understand food allergies or celiac disease. Frankly, I didn't even know what it was until she was diagnosed. So we didn't remove things to the level that you would need to be mindful of cross-contamination awareness and ingredients like, you know, malt that are not safe for those with celiacs. But, you know, when you're not aware of what it is, you're like, oh, I'm just avoiding wheat. And you don't quite understand the full spectrum. And then, you know, when she was in about first grade, I remember I was sitting in a conference and her teacher looked me in the eye, and I will remember this moment forever in all time. She looked me in the eye and she said, are you aware that your daughter has been to the nurse's office an exorbitant amount of times? And I said, no. And then she looked me in the eye and slid this paper across the desk as if I was being sent to detention myself. And she was like, this is the number of times that she's gone. And I said, well, why haven't I been notified of any of these? And when I look at them, it shows that all of these are after lunch. It's we're more than halfway through the year. Why are you just now bringing this up to me? And that was really kind of what sparked of like, okay, I need to do this, because simultaneously within the last, I think it was like the last couple of months, she kept getting this like really weird rash, and it would like come and go, and it wasn't consistent, and like it was bothering her. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, okay, like combine the two. This is now something that we need to deal with. Like I need to push past my pediatrician who keeps giving reasons for, you know, this being an issue. And I'm like, I'm going to take her to an allergist and we'll start there. Because we had tried to get allergy testing in the past and they had always said, oh, she's too young, or we don't need to do that yet, or whatever. And I'm like, forget you guys. Like, I'm going to advocate for my kid and I'm going to make you do it anyways.
Yeah.
We went and we did the full panel. She got tested for everything. But while we were there, her skin didn't react to anything. And she, you know, the allergist at the time was like, this doesn't make sense, because she's in my office and I actively see her having a rash to something, but not reacting to what's on her skin test. So she said, you know, while we're here, if you're comfortable with it, let's run blood tests for all of these allergens as well. So she ran the blood tests. And while we were talking, she's like, do you have any celiac disease in your family? And I didn't know what it was. And I said, you know, as far as I know, we don't. Like, I don't know a ton about my own medical family history, because I'm adopted and relationships in that side are not the best. So we don't have like a ton of background. I have a little bit more now since I've reached out as an adult, but at the time I didn't. So she's like, well, you know, let's throw celiac in there just to be safe. And, you know, it's probably going to come back negative because it's really rare, but, you know, we'll just see. And went through that. And a couple of days later, we got a call and she's like, absolutely. She has celiac disease. Also, she has a dairy allergy. Her numbers are through the roof for celiac. And while you can't say confidently without a biopsy, like for her numbers to be this high and her not to have celiac would be wild. So, yeah.
And I have heard that I've interviewed someone from, a celiac organization, nonprofit. And while the standard, I guess, would be the biopsy, there are times like you're saying where they can blood test and get a pretty good idea. Yeah. I have one of my children that we've been putting off doing her biopsy because I just don't want to put her through it. And you have to reintroduce gluten because you have to actually be eating it so you don't get a false positive. And anyway, we haven't done it. We've just been avoiding it, and we need to do it. We've been making sure she's avoiding gluten, I should say. But then
Athena could be her cheerleader. She's been through so many of her endoscopies. It's not even funny.
Because when you watch your child go through, you know, like for Adina, the throwing up and the rashes and the this and the that. And then for us, we tried getting rid of dairy and then that did nothing. So we're like, okay, just go ahead and eat the dairy then. But then we got rid of gluten and it was like night and day immediately.
Yeah.
So anyway.
It's wild. But
so they were able to figure out from her blood test several things at that
point. They confirmed like, okay, she definitely has a dairy allergy, but like also there's not a logical response that she doesn't have celiac disease based on the numbers. So we immediately found a pediatric GI, got scheduled for an upper endoscopy. She got her biopsy. And I think that we really lucked out because our pediatric GI is phenomenal. I do not have enough words to articulate how amazing she is with children and bedside manner. She takes an immense amount of time to explain things, to run through options. And I just love her to pieces. So anyone in Minnesota, if you need to go, definitely recommend Minji. So while we were there, we did her biopsy and, you know, our doctor comes out and she meets us in that little recovery room to talk about things. And she said, wow, well, we found a bonus diagnosis. And I kind of had to take a breath. I was like, oh, okay. Like she's like, well, you know, it definitely looks like she has celiac disease. The biopsies will confirm for sure, but visually it seems like it's pretty consistent. She had 3 intestinal ulcers, which were a result from the complete villi atrophy that she was in. She also said, she's like, on top of that, it's pretty evident to me that she has eosinophilic esophagitis. And then we spent quite a bit of time just going through what that is. And she showed us pictures of the white strictures in her esophagus and talking about just a ton of things. So we got EoE as a bonus diagnosis and had no clue what it was. It promptly made me go home and Google for the next 48 hours straight to read every paper, every research item, every website I possibly could to understand. And that was how we ended up on our journey. And, you know, with the dairy allergy and celiac disease, we found that for EoE, the most likely triggers are gluten and dairy, or I should say wheat and dairy. So because she had celiac disease, we automatically knew we were removing that. And because she has a dairy allergy, we were removing that too. So those were kind of just the initial go-to. And, you know, we went through a number of rounds of trying to see like, okay, can we do this? Like we didn't quite know, is she, cause she hadn't had anaphylactic responses at that point or anything of that nature. We went through a number of rounds of, you know, can she handle baked in? Can she do lactose only? And we just determined that, after a number of rounds of biopsies and endoscopies that we were gluten and dairy free throughout, and that has managed her pretty well, which has been very thankful about.
And fast forward, so now you have all these diagnoses, right, of multiple things that she's dealing with, and thank heavens for that teacher, even though, you know, hello, why didn't you tell me sooner? Clearly this is a problem. I agree it's a problem. I'm her mother. Why did you not tell me sooner? Because she's in your care while she's at school. How do I know?
Right.
You know? But also, thank goodness she did tell you. Because as an adult, she was like, this is not normal. What's going on with this person's kid? She went to a summer camp and had a reaction to medicine. And that's kind of what led to the Adena Act. What kind of happened there? What kind of camp was it? This was post-diagnosis, right? Or
yeah. So Adena had been going to this sleepaway camp for a few years. It's in a rural location in Wisconsin. And it's just, summer camp is just, it's part of something that my husband and I in our childhood was really amazing memories. We made so many good friends and had such great experiences. And Adena had always really enjoyed the opportunity to take part in those things. And when she, you know, did the first little, they do like a little short week or so for the first time for kids, she did it and instantly fell in love. Aww. So she had been a few times before her diagnosis and just absolutely loved it. And really from there, they saw our struggle. The camp is incredible. They have experienced her being cross-contaminated and how she responds. So for those who don't know, with celiac disease, once you get your body to a point of being healed, you oftentimes have a much more severe response when you are cross-contaminated. So like, for example, if you're eating something or encountering something daily, and it's not, for example, like an anaphylactic type response, you kind of just, the easiest way that I can explain it is, from Adina's words, is once she realized that her body didn't feel bad, I remember as a mom, she looked at me one day and she goes, "Mommy, I didn't realize that my body hurt so much." Like, it was the first time that she was like, my body feels good. And I didn't know that it didn't feel good. Like, for her whole life, yuck was her norm. And that's so sad. And it's so impactful to me that I'm like, wow. So once she got to a point where she was like really well managed, if she got cross-contaminated, her responses were really extreme. I mean, we're talking vomiting for hours, can't keep anything in her body. She gets so lethargic to the point. I remember one year she cross-contaminated herself while feeding the goats. That's a hilarious story. We'll circle back to it at some point. But I remember I was talking to the nurse in the medical unit and she was like, yeah, she wanted to eat a hamburger. So they gave her like her gluten-free safe food. And she was like, I can't even get her on the phone to talk to you because she's laying in the bed with the hamburger in her hand asleep.
Like,
she's so tired. Like, she can't even like lift her hand up and do things. She gets pounding headaches. She gets foggy headed.
And this is from the celiac. That would be hard to manage because when she's having, you know, like my son, for example, he's anaphylactic to multiple foods, but I know with him, okay, your anaphylaxis, I know what to watch for with that. My other child, we're like 99.99999% sure she has celiac. So with her and the gluten and avoiding, like you said, malt and other things, I know what to look for with her. But if I had all of that wrapped up in one child, that would be very hard.
Yeah. And especially having all of the diagnoses come at the same time and having to remove all at the same time. Once her body is healed and she has those reactions, it's almost impossible to identify what is celiac and what is dairy because belly aches, normal. Having vomiting, normal. Having rashes, normal. I mean, those are both reactions for both things. And it's, you know what I mean? Like, when I look at the reactions and responses, it's scary to say, I have no idea. Was it?
Yeah. Do I EpiPen you right now? Or is it? Yeah.
Right. Like, what are we looking at?
And I love that you share, even though as a mom and your mom heart, just like, it just kills you inside to, you know, recognize what she went through. I know that feeling. My now 8-year-old, that we believe has celiac. When we removed the gluten from her diet completely, and she, like night and day, like I said, was feeling a million times better. And then we very quickly saw improvement in her health. And she, at the time, was 6, was able to tell us basically the same thing. I didn't realize that I was hurting. Like, she thought that's how life was.
Yeah.
She thought that's how you're supposed to feel as a little child, because at 6 years old, if she had been already feeling it for, we don't know how long, you know, if it started off slow and got worse and worse. And as a 5-year-old, 6-year-old, they're just like, oh, I got tummy ache again or whatever. And maybe they don't even verbalize it or they don't, whatever. So you're not alone in that. And she's not alone in that. And, when they're able to finally feel relief and feel good again, how joyful and what a blessing and how wonderful that is. But it's not uncommon. It's so hard when you realize, oh my goodness, child, I wish you would have known that life doesn't have to be that way and you don't have to feel like that because we could have helped you sooner, but you don't know what you don't know. They don't know and they're not able to verbalize it or whatever because they just don't realize and you know, tell you. And how do you know what they're feeling? You don't. Exactly. So that's so hard. So,
I mean, it's scary, but you know, thankfully the camp has experienced her reactions and they know what it looks like. And it's very evident for Adina in particular, when she's cross-contaminated with gluten, her eyes get, I call them like zombie eyes. They get very dark, very sunken. She gets very pale. She has horrible GI pain. I mean, like curled up in a ball crying. She can't keep anything in her body. She gets joint pain. Like I was saying, like there's a number of responses that occur, which also cross over with a potential dairy cross contamination. So they've seen it. So they take it very, very, very seriously. And as a mom, I obviously pack for her for camp and we go through the list. We talk about food. I mean, they have hired a special diet chef. They are well on top of being mindful of events that they do. So they don't, you know, she doesn't cross contaminate herself feeding the goats again, like those things. Which seems silly, but it's really a part of life in the food allergy and celiac life. Like you don't always think about those things. Like, oh, that's great that your art class is doing paper mache. Can we talk about that?
Like, yeah, exactly. Or Play-Doh. Play-Doh has wheat.
Yeah, exactly.
Things like that.
So when we, you know, talked to camp, we sent up all of her over-the-counter medications, you know, things like if she has, you know, daily allergies or she has a mild fever and all of those over-the-counter basics, right, that normally camp would have or provide, we sent up because they know absolutely nothing goes in her mouth unless it's safe for her because they've seen her reactions and they don't want to deal with it any more than we want to. So when it came time, it was, she was at camp. It was 2 years ago. It was our wedding anniversary. And like the true adults that we were, Seth and I were at the water park.
That's great.
You know, I'm sitting there watching Seth jump off the zip line and I see my phone ring and it's camp. And I'm like, oh, okay, it's Saturday late afternoon. This cannot be good.
Right.
So, you know, as a mom.
No news is good news. Why am I hearing from you?
I'm like, I don't want to be hearing from you until it's time to pick her up. So, you know, I got a call and they said she's been diagnosed with strep throat. We need to give her a medication. We have a prescription on hand for the camp because they keep a number of things because they're, like I said, in a rural area or a remote area. Mm-hmm. So they keep just kind of some basics, you know, like pink eye stuff and like whatever for the kids. Yeah. And they said, you know, here's the manufacturer, here's the medication information, you know, is this safe for her? And my initial response was like, I have no idea. I'm not a pharmacist.
Right.
But given
that you would think a standard antibiotic, you wouldn't assume that it has like food related stuff in it. I wouldn't.
So from the life that we have led up to that point, we knew that not all medications are safe because this is something like we've personally had to deal with before. She like thankfully had not had a reaction to anything that she had taken to that point. But we knew the struggle of trying to get the information and how challenging it is. And especially being that it was a late Saturday timing and everything was going to be closing soon. Her pediatrician wasn't available. But we did whatever we could and we called literally everyone. Immediately we left the water park and sat in the parking lot for the next couple hours, Googling individual ingredients, calling multiple different pharmacies to try and speak to a pharmacist that could confirm information. We called the manufacturer. And of course it's outside of business hours, so you can't get a hold of them. We called doctor friends that we knew. They called pharmacist friends that they knew. Like we tried every avenue we could, and we couldn't get a consistent, this is safe or this is not. Because when you Google the ingredients, even the ingredients themselves, when the manufacturer website says, you know, it's this, it's a 12-letter word that when you Google it, it says, well, this may contain dairy or it may not. It may contain wheat or it may not. And it really just depends on the individual manufacturer. On top of the fact that, you know, for example, there are so many different medications based off of different forms, different dosages. I'm sure that, you know, even you yourself have gotten a medication where, you know, for 6 months, it's some little green pill, and then all of a sudden it's the same dosage, but you get it and it's a purple pill in different shape. Like,
you're like, wait a second.
Exactly. You're like, hold on. So things like that, you don't think about it initially, but that's a different pill, which means it has different ingredients. Mm-hmm. And we know from past experience, even just a year or two before that, I had called Benadryl, most widely known over-the-counter medication for daily allergies. Mm-hmm. And I have a Facebook post that I remember putting saying how I spent like 45 minutes on the phone with Benadryl trying to get information about which one of their pills or medication does or doesn't contain any of the top allergens. And Benadryl refused to confirm or deny if it contained any of the top allergens. And I'm like, that's irony.
So crazy.
Is so crazy.
Yeah,
so,
the irony, because that's what people with allergies would consider it, I would think. That's crazy.
And even trying to get information from the manufacturers, I know from the past that it can take days, if not weeks, to get answers, if you can get an answer at all. So we had to
It's even worse than contacting a food company, because anybody with food allergies or celiac or EOE that's ever contacted, you know, the ketchup people company, whatever, to be like, hey, since garlic's not in the top nine, because my son's anaphylactic to garlic of all things, it's not a top nine. So it'll usually say seasonings, spices, natural flavors. And we're like, that's fun. Yeah. So, and you contact the food company and they always give you these mystical non-answers. So I can only imagine with medicine, it's even worse.
It's wild. But so we had to make a decision, right? Like we knew logically that even if we were to wait until Monday when she wasn't necessarily in a rural place where we could drive to somewhere that wasn't rural to get her a medication to drive it to camp, or somebody from camp drove into the Twin Cities to pick something up. We knew it was still going to be potentially up to a couple days or a week until we get an answer for something that's safe. And we just didn't want to wait that time because she was miserable.
Yeah, she's got strep throat.
Like she's still a kid who just needs medicine to feel better. Mm-hmm. So we decided, you know, we're going to take the risk and keep an eye on her. And, you know, unfortunately it didn't pan out to be the best decision, but sometimes we, as parents, just have to make a call, and that's the call we made. We did tell the camp, you know, let's keep an eye on her. We'll see what happens and, you know, we'll go from there to try and see if we can find something locally in the meantime. But, you know, they kept an eye on her and she did start to get a bellyache, but it is a prescription that is notorious for causing tummy aches. So we kind of thought, okay, let's not jump the gun. We'll wait and see, like keep an eye on it just a little bit longer and we'll see how this progresses. Well, sure enough, sooner rather than later, it was very evident that it was not just a prescription tummy ache. It went into the full spectrum of all the things. I mean, crying belly aches, vomiting on her cabin, you know, floor.
Oh no.
Being unable to lift up her body. She was coming in and out of consciousness. She was foggy headed and had a splitting migraine that was putting her into tears. Like just things that you weren't expecting to be the response. And, you know, I will never forget getting that 2 a.m. phone call. And I picked up the phone and the nurse on the other end said, you know, her heart rate dropped to an unstable level. We're going to take her to the hospital. Do you want her to go by ambulance or should our staff drive her? And also, I don't want her to go to the hospital that's closest to us. I want her to go to one that has the ability to manage a pediatric patient of her status. And that was terrifying to me.
Absolutely.
Like, it is over 100 miles away in the middle of rural Wisconsin. And it wasn't, should we send her to the hospital? It was, how is she getting there? And I remember I grabbed my keys and I ran out the door so fast. I was halfway down the driveway before I realized I didn't have shoes on and I had to throw my car in park and run back in the house. And I think Seth woke up on my second slam of the door and called me by the time I was getting on the freeway. And he was like, what's going on? Where are you going? And I was like, I yelled at you to wake up and you were still dead asleep and I wasn't waiting for you.
Yeah.
I got to spend the joy of a 2-hour drive into the darkness with nothing but spotty cell service and the looping conversation of the conversation I had with the nurse. Of like, okay, she's in and out of consciousness. Her heart rate has dropped to an unstable level. Like we can't keep her here. And thankfully we met her at the hospital. She was able to get a good amount of treatment. She was stable by the time that we left and got home and situated. And then, you know, mama bear fury just kind of set in where I'm like, this is ridiculous.
This should have never happened.
It's so avoidable. And we're lucky, like we are very lucky that she is here and she is okay. And we are able to advocate, but.
And it wasn't for lack of effort on your part. It wasn't for lack of effort on the camp's part.
Not at all. Like we all knew we all had to make the choices, but we need access to the information as a food allergy, celiac, EOE, like anyone that deals with a dietary restriction, like all we need is the information. Yep. And even those who are willing to take the time, take the effort and do the research can't get that information. For example, Xanax has 168 listings on Daily Med. It's a website that provides information on ingredients, and not all of that is up to date. If there's a change in manufacturer process, if there's, you know, some of them might be missing, it's, you can't rely on that. But even that, it's one medication that has 168 listings. And we've spoken to pharmacists and medical professionals and biomed and, you know, people, and all of them say, I don't have access to this information. So how are you as a consumer supposed to have access to this information? So from there, it really just kind of lit a fire as I'm sitting there, you know, not only dealing with a kid who's miserable and trying to heal from this experience, also dealing with the medical bill of a hospital that we should have never had to deal with. So Seth got instantly on the phone, sending emails to our state representatives and senators and reaching out and saying like, hey, the FDA requires food to be labeled for allergens. Why is it not applicable for medications? For families like ours, this is an imperative piece of legislation that needs to be put into place. And, you know, it took a little bit to kind of get in touch with the right people, but I'm really thankful that we did. And right away, Rep. Phillips's team, we had a meeting with Meg Montgomery, who has a health background, and she instantly was blown away that this isn't already something that's in place. And I think that because Adina has both celiac disease and EOE, we can kind of bridge the gap, whereas there was previous legislation to have gluten specifically identified, but because of the dairy allergy, it broadens the horizons. And we're like, it just needs to umbrella, include everybody and make it a more impactful piece so that we can get a little bit more traction. And immediately they saw the need, they saw that it would complete like a missing link in consumer protection, consumer awareness, and just, it was a logical piece. So they ran with it and we were elated, like so ecstatic that they jumped on board. And now I feel like we're living a real life version of Schoolhouse Rock. I'm just a bill.
Yeah. And the fact that you were able to, it's kind of like the perfect storm, and how that's so tragic and it shouldn't have happened at all to her, and thank heavens she's okay. But how, I don't want to say how wonderful, but it's like, as a parent of a kid with food allergies and also a parent of a kid that we're pretty sure has celiac, I'm so grateful that she was able to bring attention to all of it, not just celiac, not just food allergies, not just EOE. Like if somebody was going to be the perfect person, you know, to bring this forward, and you, your husband being such good advocates, it's like, you know, the perfect storm, if you will. And you don't want this to happen to anybody. It shouldn't take something like this happening to someone to make it come forward, but thank goodness that it has. And how cool that it's called the Adina Act, but it's, you said it's not really, or her name, it's an acronym that coincidentally has to do with that. That's her name.
Yeah. So they actually worked to make it make it make Adina in the title, but it's technically called the Allergen Disclosure and Non-Food Articles Act, which really appropriately encompasses what its purpose is. I just think it's so cool that it also is the Adina Act sparked by Adina. And she said it herself, even Adina has recognized at one point when we were going to do a recent presentation for FAIR, the Food Allergy Research and Education Courage for Congress fly-in, which we did just a couple weeks ago. She was talking to me as we were preparing our speech and kind of getting ready. And she looked at me, she goes, you know, Mom, this was really horrible and it was really scary. And it has a lot of lasting impact on her. But she said, something horrible that happened to me is going to help the lives of 100 million people. And I think that's amazing that I can turn something really traumatic for us into something really helpful. And I think it's really great that being her age and having the perspective of understanding that is so yes. cool. And it's just going to be such a lasting memory for her, which I think is really cool.
And it is so traumatic. And as kind of backing up a little bit before we move forward into the details of the bill, is when you were explaining your driving to go see her, so many in the food allergy, celiac, EOE, in those communities can relate to that. My son, and I've talked about this before on this podcast, he had an anaphylactic reaction out in the middle. We live in Arizona, out in the middle of the desert. He went with a bunch of men and teen boys to this youth group activity in the middle of the desert. They were blowing up mortars in the middle of the desert because that's a fun thing to do. And he ended up, we believe it was cross-contamination. We'll never really know because I wasn't there. But he had an anaphylactic reaction in the middle of the desert where there's no nearby hospitals. And it is traumatic. It is so traumatic, and everybody experiences trauma differently. And so I don't want to speak for you, but I know the trauma that the emotional trauma of me driving in the middle of the night, in the middle of a dark desert, to go get my child. And we had to get him after he had two shots of Epi in the middle of the desert to the hospital. And reliving it, it brings back the trauma. Mm-hmm. It's awful. You can't even describe it to somebody what that's like. And so traumatic for your daughter, but also traumatic for you and your husband. And so I'm just so grateful that even as a young child, she's able to see the silver lining in it though. And able to hopefully help others not have to go through that, not have to go through the trauma because they're able to read the label and say, okay, shouldn't take this, and then avoid that unnecessary reaction. And you've gotten 34 co-sponsors to this bill in addition to the author of the bill. Is that?
We have some big news. We actually just had 4 more co-sponsors sign up.
Wow.
Yeah. So we're up to 38, including Dean Phillips, the initial, author of the bill, which is phenomenal. We are so excited. We're making huge headway. And we're just really excited that we've made this amount of progress. When we went to Courage for Congress just a couple of weeks ago, we found out that we were in the top 20% of legislature that was introduced in the 118th Congress of support. So it means we are, of all the things that were introduced, we are in the top 20% that have the most amount of legislative support, which is incredible.
And it's, so bipartisan. And since the numbers have changed from 34 to 38, I'm sure that the, Democrats and the Republicans, how many there are of each. And I know it can be so polarizing nowadays. I don't remember it being so polarizing several many years ago. And it's just gotten more polarizing and more polarizing. But if everybody can kind of take that cap off for a minute and just think about, people that we know in our own families, in our neighborhoods, in our schools, in our communities, in our state, in our nation that have EOE, that have celiac, that have food allergies. And this is in fact a bipartisan, bill where we want the Democrats, we want the Republicans. I mean, with any bill that people are pushing forward, they want everybody to vote usually on it. But we really do, and we want to encourage more out there to get on board so that, like you and your husband have mentioned, that there's a healthy balance of each side of the aisle so that mm-hmm. we can hopefully get it passed into law. What can people do? Is there a website? You know, because you mentioned the Schoolhouse Rock, right? How a bill becomes a law. And all jokes aside, though, people don't know how their government works like they should know their government works. And that's okay. Sometimes we learn about it in school and then we forget, we get caught up in life or whatever, but how does a bill become a law? And so my point I'm getting at is a lot of people don't know who their elected officials are, funny enough. Right? Like we've all seen it, like on the, what's he called? Jimmy Kimmel. And I remember seeing other ones when I was younger where people go out on the street. I'm sure people have seen these, right? Like where TV show hosts will go out and be like, hey, do you know who the president is? Do you know who the vice president is? Do you know who this person is? And people don't know. And you're like, how do you not know? How do you not know? But people don't know. And that's okay. So if people are listening, and they're like, I know you're laughing, but I don't know. That's okay. Yeah. We will help you. And I will put a link. I actually Googled last night to try and find where is the link that I, because I know who mine are, you know, but there are people that don't know. Here's a link and we'll put it in the show notes so that people can go and find out who their local elected officials are. And so, you know, in each state, you have your local state House of Representatives, your local state Senate, but this is a national bill. So this is in Congress in Washington, D.C. And so people will want to find out who their House of Representatives are, and they'll want to find out who their senator is from their state that is representing them in Washington, D.C., in Congress, not your local Senate, local House of Representatives.
Yeah, exactly.
So what details do you have for them? Like people that have been asking you, what do I do? What do you tell them?
Yeah. So when people ask me, you know, how can I support the ADINA Act? First and foremost, call your U.S. congressman or state representative, as well as your senators more than once, because that's really necessary. They need to hear from their constituents. They need to hear that this is a persistent issue. It's great that you can call one time, but they need to hear from you like a squeaky wheel. Kind persistence is the name of the game. Mm-hmm. Just let them know you want them to not only support the ADINA Act, but directly ask them to co-sponsor. They can get in touch with Representative Dean Phillips' office to answer any questions, to get specific information about the bill, ask any clarifying questions from their health staffers. The next thing that they can do beyond that is ask for a meeting with their U.S. representatives and senators. And if those individuals aren't available, ask for their healthcare staffer. When you meet with them, share your story as a food allergy or a celiac or EOE or food restricted family of why it's important to have clear labeling of allergens and gluten on medication and how it impacts you as their constituent, and how it can affect millions of lives in the US. And then on top of that, tell your friends, tell your family, tell everyone. This is a federal bill, not a state bill. And this is an issue that affects up to 100 million Americans that live with issues like our family every day. And then if you want to stay up to date, you can follow us on Instagram. We're at the ADINA Act Effort, and may potentially be working on some other like a website and information to kind of get more information together. But for now, at the ADINA Act on Instagram, we also have a Facebook group so that you can follow progress and feedback. Like we posted the recent update about the additional co-sponsors. We'll share a little bit of information about news articles or things like that. So as you're spreading the word and sharing with friends, family, coworkers, you have a place to kind of point them to say, hey, this is where you can get more information about the bill and keep up to date with what's going on. That's wonderful. You get to see Adina sometimes, and she's kind of fun. So
and be sure to send me all those links to the Facebook group and everything, and I'll put it in the show notes. So anybody that's listening can just click on down to the show notes and navigate right over to your Facebook group or right over to your Instagram. And if they are, I will put this actual link in the show notes, but in case somebody's listening and they don't want to go to the show notes or for whatever reason, you can literally, this is what I did last night, is you can go to Google and you can just type in, who is my congressman? And when you type in, who is my congressman, congress.gov, a congress.gov site pops up where you can then click that and type in your address and hit search. And it will literally populate who your state representatives are and who your senator is for your address, for your location, for your area. And then even better, it literally has a button that you can click to email them so that it automatically pulls up your email. You don't even have to type in your email because you can just click on the little link from there. And then you can also call them and do all those things that you said. And it is so important. It's great if other people wanted to also call some of the others, but they want to hear from their local constituents, the people that vote them into office. That's the name of the game. That's how it works. And so if I'm contacting, if I'm contacting senators or House of Representatives from other states, they're not going to really care as much unless I tell them, like for me, I'm in Arizona. If I contact Andy Biggs and say, I am in your state, I have the ability to vote you in and out of office, right? They want to know I'm your constituent. You let them know that. Be very specific. I am your constituent. It's life changing because they're like, oh, I got to listen to you.
Exactly.
You're my people. And then I have like Kristen Sinema and things like that. So those are the types of people, type of representatives, the ones, you know, for me that I will be reaching out to and asking them. When I do, I will also be sure, and we'll put this in the show notes, to reference HR 4263. That is the number on the House of Representatives bill. And again, we'll put this in the show notes. And then for the Senate, the bill number is 2079. And this can be overwhelming if you're not somebody that follows along with politics, if you're not somebody that follows along with, if you haven't seen The Schoolhouse Rock, How a Bill Becomes a Law, and you're like, what's going on? It really can be confusing. It could be overwhelming. Don't let that stop you from throwing in your support. We will try to make this super easy in the show notes. I might even put a little blurb in there, or if you want to write it, however you want, that people can copy and paste. If they're like, kind of like stage fright, I don't know what to say to the senator. I don't know what to say to my state representative. That's okay. We'll put something in the show notes that you can copy and paste. And then if you want to elaborate and share your own story to kind of like share your testimony of why it's important to you, we can do that too. We'll try and make it so easy in the show notes so that there's no excuse for people to not jump on board and help out.
I love it. And I mean, you know, just some quick talking points for anyone that has questions.
Yeah, that would be very helpful. Yeah.
The objective of the DENA Act is to require plain language label transparency of all top allergens and gluten-containing grains in any medication over the counter and prescription. That's it. It's umbrella written language so that if in the future there's more than just to the top 9 food allergens, like for example, how we recently included sesame, we don't have to go back and amend the bill.
So smart.
It automatically just files right in there as a top food allergen. It's, you know, like you said, it is nonpartisan. Food allergens don't affect you only if you're a Democrat or only if you're a Republican.
Right.
It's a human issue, which is a federal issue. And, you know, as far as, you know, it adds nothing to the federal budget. We're not asking for proprietary information. We just need, like, the same as you're walking through the grocery store aisles, you know, 1 through 14, you can look at any label on any package and have clear understanding in plain language. This contains milk. This contains this. You want the same exact notification on medications over the counter and prescription. And all it's doing is in this very simple 2-page plain language bill is asking for those to be disclosed. And the pharmaceutical manufacturers are just the ones that are going to do that based off of an amendment with a piece that's already in the FDA. So it's pretty simple. We're just applying what's on food to medication, and that's it.
That's wonderful. Jennifer, thank you so much for joining me on the show today. Before we go, you mentioned the cross-contamination from feeding the goats. And so I'm very curious about this because we have goats.
Yeah.
We actually have Nigerian dwarfs. We live on a farm out here in southeastern rural Arizona. And I actually have 3 pregnant does right now. We have a couple of intact bucks and some donkeys and chickens and all sorts of stuff. So I'm like, I'm very curious. I think I'd be curious anyway, just because I have some with food allergies and things like that. But I'm like, oh, we have goats too. What happened? But it's important for people to know. It's one of those things that kind of like with medicine, it's not just about food that humans eat. It's also about medicine that people take. And it's also about, have you checked your dog's food? Because dog food oftentimes has peanut or other things in it. Have you checked your cat food, your bird food, your fish food, your goat food, right? Yeah. Like if you're giving them some pellets or whatnot, aside from the hay, or like out here, we give them Bermuda. I don't know. It's probably different since you live in a different state, but what happened?
So this was, I want to say it was the second year she was diagnosed. Maybe the third. I don't totally remember offhand, but so she was at camp. She was like midway through. Everything had gone pretty smoothly to that point. Nothing crazy. And I get a call. Same type of thing. She's having, you know, cross contamination responses. Like she's got the dark circles under her eyes. She's vomiting. Like this is what's going on. And we went through with a fine tooth comb of everything, what she had fed. And that was a year where I had sent up like 95% of her food to camp, prepared. And, you know, the chefs had made a separate space. They did all the things right. Like without question, we walked through the entire day. And then at one point somebody had mentioned what they had done as a cabin activity was feeding the goats. And I said, well, what do the goats eat? And we walked through and I was like, well, that contains gluten. And at some point in time, she must have, you know, touched her water bottle and then taken a drink or like touched her lips or something happened, because the timing of when she fed the goats to when it started was within the range of when things would start to go a little sideways. And then it was very clear once, you know, they sent me a picture of her and I saw her dark sunken eyes and all of the other symptoms kind of lined up. And I was like, okay. So she cross-contaminated herself feeding the goats. And it's funny, but sad at the same time that I'm like, such a simple thing that she was just like loving animals and feeding them, that you don't even think about those things, that it's very real.
Yeah. But once you have celiac or food allergies or EOE or any of the other, you know, things that are out there to have and deal with and worry about, it's not just normal day-to-day life.
Right.
Not, it's not just breakfast, lunch, and dinner and snacks. That's what a lot of people don't understand that are not living this life, whether it be a life with food allergies or a life with EOE or a life with celiac, is that it's now enjoying a simple, wonderful, innocent childhood activity at a summer camp of feeding goats. And all it takes, just the same with food allergies as with celiac, and other things, is that you can have a reaction once that allergen or the gluten for celiac gets in your eyes, your nose, your mouth. It just needs to enter your body. And that can happen from it being on your hands and you didn't wash your hands good enough, or I was always worried of my child when he would go to like scouts and things, you know, like, okay, if they blow a whistle for some reason, because, you know, they have whistles if they're camping, don't put your mouth on someone else's whistle.
It's
those things that you have to worry. Yeah. Water bottle.
Because they're pulling the tops up to open up. Yeah. Like they're pulling the tops up to open up their water bottle and take a drink. And I'm like, babe, whatever you just touched is now on
your water bottle. all the extra small things that you have to worry about.
Yeah.
I'm glad that she's okay.
Yeah.
I'm so glad that she's okay. Well, thank you for sharing that story. Thank you for sharing your whole story, your family's story with us, Adina's story. Thank you, and Seth and Adina, for your advocacy. I am hoping and praying that this act, that this bill is signed into law. By the way, before we jump off, do you know if there's kind of like a deadline that you all are aiming for to try and get a certain number of signatures? Like if people are listening, you know, and they're like, okay, it's the end of March. How soon do I need to jump on this and make my voice heard, if you will?
This is an immediate action response. So we have until the end of the 118th Congress, which is in January of 2025. So you can count the months on how long we have.
Okay.
The reality is while we're hopeful, it can take upwards of 7 to 10 years to get bills like this passed. But we're in a really big sweet spot right now where if we get co-sponsors now, they're more likely to continue to be co-sponsors when it is reintroduced into the next Congress. So if we don't get it passed by January, we have to start all over again. Now, thankfully, it's a pretty common sense bill. We are likely to have it reintroduced. I won't dive into that for the sake of time, but we're pretty good on that respect. But the more co-sponsors we can get now, the easier it's going to be once it's reintroduced, if that does go to that point. So
don't put it off until tomorrow.
Yeah,
do it today.
Don't pause. Do it today. And don't hesitate. You know, reach out to the ADINA Act. And if you have more questions, we're happy to participate however we can. And they just need to hear from you as your constituents that it's important.
Perfect, Jennifer. Thank you so much. Be sure to follow Jennifer, Seth, and ADINA. Find them on their social media and in the news. I'm sure we'll be hearing more about it as this makes it its way through the House, through the Senate. Thank you again so much. This is the Food Allergy Talk podcast, where you can come to connect and leave uplifted, empowered, and ready for success.
I'm your host, Lisa Horn of Food Allergy PI. Thanks for tuning in to the Food Allergy Talk podcast. Don't miss a future episode. Let's stay connected. Be sure to subscribe at iTunes, Spotify, Google, Amazon, Stitcher, iHeartRadio, Pandora, TuneIn Alexa, Podcast Addict, Podchaser, Pocket Casts, Deezer, Listen Notes, Player FM, Podcast Index, and Reason FM. And until next time, remember, don't hesitate, investigate, and always carry two. This podcast is brought to you by the Everything Nut Allergy Cookbook, available wherever books are sold. Find details at foodallergypi.com. And be sure to join me over on Facebook, the Food Allergy PI Community Group, where we can connect, support, and share.